The Holy Gospel according to Luke, the 18th chapter. Glory to you, O Lord. Then Jesus told them a parable about their need to pray always and not to lose heart. He said, in a certain city there was a judge who neither feared God nor had respect for people. In that city there was a widow who kept coming to him and saying, "Grant me justice against my opponent." For a while he refused, but later he said to himself, "Though I have no fear of God and no respect for anyone, yet because this widow keeps bothering me, I will grant her justice, so that she may not wear me out by continually coming." And the Lord said, "Listen to what the unjust judge says. And will not God grant justice to his chosen ones who cry out to him day and night? Will he delay long in helping them? I tell you, he will quickly grant justice to them. And yet, when the Son of Man comes, will he find faith on earth?" The Gospel of the Lord. Praise to you, O Christ. You may be seated. What's your name? Do you know what your name means? Do you know who chose it for you? The story of how it was chosen? Do you feel your name represents you well, or is it misleading? Have you ever wanted to change your name? Or perhaps some of you already have. Or does your name hold deep meaning for you? Besides our actual given names, there are a lot of other names that we give ourselves or that others give to us throughout our lives. Some of these names are titles full of prestige, such as champion or valedictorian or teacher of the year. And some of these names are titles full of blessings, such as brother, sister, mother, father, daughter, son, cousin, or dear friend. And some of these names are titles full of description: gymnast, professor, builder, lawyer, plumber. And some of these names are titles full of reminders about our shortcomings, such as divorcee, workaholic, bully, failure, brown noser, clown, slouch, alcoholic, dummy, glutton, party boy or girl, miser, addict, or lunatic. That last set of names isn't so fun. For others, misuse these names to insult, wound, and hurt. And if we feel we fit the bill of such names, well, then the damage is even worse, and it's even harder to recover. In fact, sometimes we ourselves become the biggest perpetrator of such titles against ourselves. We allow these names to sink into our hearts, our souls, and our minds, until we begin to believe the lie that they are deeply true reflections of who we are and all we ever will be. Unavoidable realities that reflect our greatest weakness, our brokenness, our limitations. And in this way, such names we give ourselves or allow others to give us end up feeding our feelings of unworthiness, shame, guilt, and regret. Jacob, in our reading from Genesis for today, had such a name. Jacob literally means the usurper, the supplanter, the cheat. Not a fun trio of titles. And yet, we know that as awful as this name must have been for Jacob to bear, it was also an accurate reflection of who Jacob was. I'm guessing many of you of all ages remember the story, right? From Sunday school, the story of Jacob and Esau, even older than our reading for today. The story of that horribly wrong thing that happened when they were just teenage boys. When Jacob, the younger brother, stole Esau, the older brother's, birthright and blessing. And he stole it by cheating, by pretending to be Esau and fooling his elderly father into giving the wrong son the blessing. So it's true. Jacob was a usurper of another's claim to inheritance and blessing, and Jacob cheated in order to make that happen. Jacob seems like one of these carefree, nothing bothering me kind of guys who walk through life with a whole lot of good things happening to them. Blessings seem to come their way right and left, and while we wouldn't say that they've never worked hard or done anything to deserve these things, at the same time, we find ourselves saying, sheesh, that guy seems to have a charmed life. I mean, Jacob is blessed with this large family. He has two wives and two maids. And he doesn't need to worry about who will take care of him. Ancient social security was children, and he has 11 of them to take care of them in his old age. And I mean, look at the stuff that he's accumulated. I don't know about you, but I got lost in the list of items Jacob is offering to Esau as a present. 26 of this and 45 of that, and enough stuff that you can actually drive them in individual droves to make them look all the more impressive. Jacob ran away after stealing his brother's birthright and family blessing, and it seems that the scam really worked out well for him. It seems that God has done nothing but shower him with blessings since he left. And yet, does Jacob seem happy? Go ahead and turn, if you haven't already, to the Genesis reading so you can kind of follow along as we work through this. Does Jacob seem happy? Does he seem carefree in our reading for today? Does he seem to have it all together? Of course, that would be one big fat no. From the very start of our passage for today, and thanks for bearing with me and reading the whole thing. It's important, I promise. But from the very beginning of our passage, Jacob seems the polar opposite of carefree, easygoing, and blessed. No, indeed, this guy seems really majorly stressed out. He begins by sending a note to his brother, the ancient day equivalent of a text message to avoid face-to-face communication. I mean, why keep walking? Why meet Esau so abruptly? What's the rush, after all? It would be better to butter him up with a kindly worded note. It'd be better to test him out, to see where he stands and how he responds. I mean, we've all been there, right? Thinking to ourselves, I'll just send a little complimentary message by text or email, and then maybe I just never have to apologize for being so rude the last time I saw so-and-so. But Jacob's servant returns not with a note back from Esau, but with a simple message, Esau saying, I'm coming to meet you, and I've got 400 guys with me. Gulp. Jacob freaks out, right? He begins to prepare for the worst, warning everyone that Esau is coming, and he is angry, still upset about that stolen blessing from years ago. But who wouldn't be? Jacob, now with his back against the wall, decides to pray. A lot like us, too, right? Reminding God of some important things. He says to God in this prayer, God, you are the God of my grandfather and my father. You are the one who told me to come back. I always thought that was a stupid idea. Oops, sorry. But it seems that I might die with all these people alongside me. And most importantly, you said if I was brave and I returned and I faced my brother, that you would do even more good for me. And this God, an angry brother marching on me with 400 men, I don't mean to question your definition of good, but it doesn't seem to exactly fit the description of what I would call good. And with that prayer, Jacob settles in for the night. He wakes up and he reveals that the prayer and the evening's rest have brought little comfort. Instead, he has been up all night thinking of a new plan that will save him. And he has it. He will bribe his brother, giving him a magnificent gift. He will show Esau how sorry he is with donkeys and milch camels and ewes. And sure, you and I might use different, slightly more alluring items for modern times. But we have to admit that this story of Jacob's seems to follow our own stories to an uneasy extent. He sends this present in massive droves ahead of him and again waits patiently, settling in for another uneasy night, still not willing to face his brother. And here, dear friends, is where the story really seems to hit home. On this night, one of the most famous nights in all of Scripture, this faithful but broken man, Jacob, spends every last hour wrestling in the darkness. He wrestles all night long with some strange man. Back and forth they go, twisting and turning, struggling and tumbling, no one seeming to gain the advantage. And in the morning, when the day breaks, and usually our nighttime anxieties dissipate in the light of day, and the knowledge that there is a new tomorrow consoles us, Jacob is still struggling, still anxiously holding on to the man, demanding that he will not let go unless the stranger blesses him. And when the stranger agrees, he says the last thing that Jacob wants to hear. He says, "Tell me your name." Jacob's name is what has haunted him all night, and the night before that, and the night before that. And in some ways, it's been haunting him ever since he was that young teenage boy, the day he fulfilled his namesake by supplanting, usurping, and cheating his very own brother. And so asking Jacob's name is like asking him to confess that which he has shamefully carried for so long, that which he has struggled against, his own feelings of unworthiness, his fear that this action in his past puts him beyond redemption, and his deep and abiding knowledge that he deserved punishment and not the blessings he has received. So when he says, "Jacob, that is my name, that is who I am," after this night of struggle, something finally begins to shift for him. And miraculously, magnificently, oh so graciously, God changes Jacob's name to Israel. And Israel means one who struggles with God. As the quote from Brené Brown on our bulletin cover claims, "Our willingness to be brokenhearted is the only pathway to being wholehearted. Our knowledge of our vulnerability is the beginning point of knowing our true worth." Not just for Jacob, but for each of us. And that was what Jacob struggled with. And who he was really struggling with was indeed God. He was struggling with his very real sense of guilt in the midst of God's blessings and grace and unconditional love. Jacob struggled to reconcile these two things. And I don't know about you, but I so often find myself in those shoes of Jacob, knowing myself to have failed, knowing I have let others down. I've let God down. I've let myself down, and I've hurt those that I loved, sometimes those I loved most. And it causes me to struggle. It causes me to wrestle with God and myself. Can these gifts of unconditional love and grace really be true? Even for me, even for you. But God just keeps wrestling with us. Every objection we have and every struggle, giving us new names. God calls you son, and God calls you daughter. And God calls you to live into that new name and that new identity. No longer anxious or preoccupied by your failings, but living into this promise instead. And so this morning, I wonder with all of you, even as we find ourselves limping from wrestling with past wrongs we have committed, can we also see the sun rising? I want to close today with two verses of the passage that follows our reading. After all, I didn't want to give away the ending, did I? But after all of Jacob's worry, how did Esau respond? With battle? In anger? Let's see. Genesis chapter 33, verses 3 and 4. Jacob himself went on ahead to meet Esau, bowing himself to the ground 7 times until he came near his brother. But Esau ran to meet Jacob, and he embraced him, and he fell on Jacob's neck, and he kissed him, and together they wept. Amen.